The Capital Investment Committee hearing for January 18th is called to order. A quorum is present. Representative Ryer, can I have a motion to approve the minutes for January 11th?
I move approval of the minutes for January 11th.
Vice Chair Ryer moves approval of the minutes for January 11th. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say nay. Motion prevails and the minutes for January 11th are approved. Members, today we will be hearing from both of Minnesota's public higher education system on their overview for their 2023 capital budget requests, and also hear from them regarding their HEPA appropriations. And so first off of the agenda, we have the University of Minnesota. I understand that President Gable is not able to join us, and so Vice President Franz will be here to present on behalf, and we also have a student. So Vice President Franz, please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ranking Member Erdahl and members of the committee for this opportunity today. My name is Myron Franz. I'm the Senior Vice President for Finance and Operations at the University of Minnesota. I also want to recognize members of the Board of Regents who may be able to attend part of today's meeting or who might be joining us remotely. And also thanks and hello to our friends, Chancellor Maholtra and my friends from Minnesota State University. Glad to see them here too. It's a pleasure, obviously, to be with you today and talk about this appreciation we have for the support that the state and the university, the legislature and the governors have given the university over the years. And I want to start talking about Minnesota, the University of Minnesota, as a world-class institution and a place-based institution. Part of what we're talking about today, obviously, is the infrastructure, which underscores that. But our system is really grounded, and our request today is really grounded in a strategic plan, what we call Impact 2025. This is a plan that has benefited greatly from input from the legislature and others around the state. And this plan is inspired by the state of Minnesota and reflects our commitment to world-class research, teaching, and service. Impact 2025 also reflects our priorities and our needs. And accordingly, this guides the choices that we make, such as setting our budgetary framework at the university, and especially as we seek help from the University of legislature about our land grant research institution, making sure that it's affordable and accessible for all Minnesotans. So during this last year, we have welcomed the most diverse class in the history of the university and the second largest cohort in the Twin Cities in a half a century. The first largest cohort was the year before. While we've enrolled the largest class of Minnesota high school graduates as freshmen ever, we've been elevated into the top 25 among national public research universities. We've been selected as a host for the 2026 Special Olympics USA Games, and as one of America's noted, we're one of America's best employers for diversity. We increased our sense of belonging of the Twin Cities undergraduate to 88%, up 10% over last year. And we've elevated our partnership with Minnesota's tribal nations, including historic engagement with the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council. We've also worked to reduce administrative costs, overhead through our PEAK initiative that we can talk about later. And we've also been working hard to keep student debt under the national average. We launched innovative programming, the Next Gen Ag and NextGen Med this year, which leverages a proprietary Google technology and partnerships with leading institutions like Mayo Clinic. And last week, you may have heard we announced the Impact Healthcare Innovation Vision, a vision rooted in the university's autonomy in controlling the existing healthcare facilities on our Twin Cities campus. Members of the committee were proud of the progress we've made through Impact 2025 and our coordinated work with the legislature to achieve those on behalf of the university family, the people of the state of Minnesota, and obviously Minnesota's future. What I'd like to do today is talk a little bit about the opportunity that we have before us. First, the deferred maintenance backlog across the university's 30 million plus square feet of facility space is widespread, touching on the student experience, academic programs, research initiatives, and general competitiveness. We have a large and diverse facility portfolio. 50% of our buildings are over 50 years old, as am I, but we can't deal with that today. We have 8.8 million square feet of space that's now considered to be in poor condition or in critical condition. And that figure will increase year over year. So how did we get here? Well, to keep up the demands of our infrastructure, we must make progress every year. But, as you all know, when we don't have a bonding bill, facility conditions can worsen. Important teaching and research programs suffer and get delayed, and projects get more expensive. For example, last month at the Regional Fitness Center on the Morse campus, a leaking skylight caused moisture to build up, which led to the failure where a section of the ceiling fell into the pool. Thankfully, no one was injured. But the fitness center serves not only the campus, but also the town and surrounding community. This is a warm water pool with an accessible entry used by people with a wide range of physical abilities, including for rehabilitation purposes. And another example of the delays and the cost of delays is a chemistry teaching project we'll be talking about later today. The total project cost was $98.4 million in 2020 when we first presented this to the legislature for funding. Had the project been fully funded then, construction would have been concluding this fall. And fast forward to 3 years from today, and the same project is now estimated at $138.9 million using Minnesota Management and Budget's inflation estimates. Timing could not have been worse with the extraordinary macroeconomic changes between 2020 and now. The three-year delay also means several classes of undergrads from every college on the Twin Cities campus will never benefit from the teaching opportunities in this, or learning opportunities in this building. The university has only received a capital appropriation in about 4 out of the last 10 years. Even then, the amount has not kept pace with either the needs or the construction inflation. And in that scenario, you all know we lose ground. And there's an impact to the delay. The university really only has two sources of facility renewal: state bonding from the legislature, or the university's general operating budget. If the university does not receive predictable HEPR allocations from the state, and I assume everyone in this room now knows that HEPR stands for Higher Education Asset Preservation and Replacement, we all use it around here a lot, we only get sources from either tuition or state operating funds for our operating budget. Increasing the use of either of these sources really has a direct negative impact on students, faculty, and programs. So underfunding investments have led to situations where basic improvements for current code accessibility standards can't advance. We have buildings without fire sprinklers, elevators, or wheelchair ramps, and they'll continue to present a risk and challenge to our occupants and visitors. Chronic underfunding adds up. Across the enterprise, the University of Minnesota should be investing, we believe, about $200 million annually just to maintain current conditions of our infrastructure. So currently we're in a declining condition trend where the poor critical space is going to increase every year. A regular and predictable HEPR allows the university to avoid even more expensive emergency repairs. We all know how much it is, how much less expensive it is to thoughtfully plan to address aging and obsolete systems in a comprehensive manner rather than wait and try to fix each system when there's a failure. The industry metric says that every dollar in stewardship or asset preservation can avoid $3 in future capital renewal investment. Therefore, a $100 million HEPR investment will save the university and the state approximately $300 million over time. And extending the useful life of an existing investment will always be more economical than replacing it with a new building. For an example, the university avoided the need to build a new mechanical engineering building on the Twin Cities campus by making significant reinvestment through HEPR to modernize the existing obsolete building systems. This investment made the building functional for modern teaching and research. But let's talk a little bit about renewal investments versus our target. You know, facility condition assessment, inspections, and studies and modeling tell us how much and where we should be investing to be good stewards of our public assets. This chart compares what the university, in partnership with the state, has been able to invest each year against what the facility condition assessment data says we should be investing. The chart compares what the university has been making over time. The bottom of the yellow range shows the amount needed to address all of the building issues that have been added to the deferred maintenance backlog. The university requests $200 million for your approval because that figure represents our current need. That is also a number that we know we can deliver on. The university has the processes and experience to deliver any amount, so if you so choose to increase that, we can work with that number too. We estimate that nearly $1 billion has been added to our backlog of needs over the last 10-year period. That means we've gone from a renewal assessment of about $4.1 billion now to about a $5.1 billion renewal assessment over the last several years. So as we look at the amount of HEPR that we've received, it's been about 7% of the requested required funding over the last several years. The university will continue to see HEPR as the number one priority in our asset request from the state. I want to talk a little bit about the focus on space and what areas we focus on primarily. As I talked about at the very beginning, the university is a place-based system where people come to do in classrooms, research laboratories. If you look on this chart, you can see all the things on the left side that we do because we need to do this to provide the right kind of learning environment and opportunities for our students and the way that they live. You can see on that chart that we have about 21.5% of our overall space is what we call office space. I want to emphasize that our primary focus on improving utilization is on office space. The projects in this request are being designed differently than they would have been just a few years ago, with less individual office space and more shared and flexible space going forward. In addition to the projects on the request, the university is working in other ways to reduce its office space. We are actively working to vacate several campus buildings and to consolidate faculty and staff into a smaller, more intensely used footprint. Morrill Hall, where my office and the president's office is one example. We are planning to remove administrative functions from the building and replace it with student-facing resources and activities on the core of the campus. While office space is our focus, we will not pass up opportunities to consolidate elsewhere. We closed and have plans to eventually demolish the Conference and Events Center building on the St. Paul campus. This is a 72,000 square foot building with a critical condition rating and more than $20 million in capital renewal needs. We concluded that the functions that can be met elsewhere in existing space and the best course of action is to remove that building. We're also working to reduce our leased footprint where possible. For example, in August, we were able to avoid renewing a lease for 27,000 square feet of office space in a building near campus. The three university units previously located in that building were able to consolidate with the existing university space on the East Bank. So there's a continual focus on reducing office space, being more efficient, using shared space throughout the campus wherever we can. This chart represents the capital requests by the university. It's a deliberate and disciplined planning process that got us here. It demonstrates a commitment from us to provide access and excellence for students and scholars. It helps us expand capacity for clinical care and research, clinical care and research that benefit all Minnesotans. So what I'd like to do is go through some of these projects and give you a little bit more information. We've talked about HEPR before. The request for HEPR is $200 million, and it's our priority number one. The statute specifically focuses, many of you know, on preserving and replacing existing buildings and has strict parameters around how funds may be spent. Projects must fall into one of five categories: accessibility, health and safety, building systems like HVAC, plumbing, electrical, infrastructure, or energy efficiency. While these investments may not be glamorous, they are essential to keeping the U of M safe, functioning, and welcoming. The U of M follows a very rigorous process for selecting projects that meet all eligibility requirements and routinely reports on progress to the legislature and Minnesota Management and Budget. Given our immense need and limited resources, we are careful with how every single dollar is invested. The university's facility condition assessment process identifies the most critical projects and helps lay them out in a timeline by campus and by building. Next, we use a building-by-building strategy to identify the most critical buildings. At the campus system level, leadership and staff are routinely engaged to review and confirm priorities. One of the most pressing projects that we have identified for the most important buildings Once we complete that process, we consider several other factors I think might be of interest to you. Number one, the criticality of the facility condition. How bad is the problem? Number two, the risk assessment. How likely is that problem going to get worse in the immediate future? Health and safety assessment. What is the risk for people, animals, and programs? And number four, regulatory requirements. What is the risk for, what is the urgency due to law changes, new codes, et cetera? And then the last one is program impact. How significantly is this condition issue impacting or limiting teaching, research, or other program needs? I wanted to give you a few examples of HEPA projects around our five-campus system. I have the four campuses listed here. You should note that in Rochester, we have a different model where we've been leasing our facilities on the Rochester campus. And so facility conditions are monitored through the lease process down there in Rochester. But here, some examples of the HEPA projects. One of them is at Crookston campus, where we have a natural gas distribution line replacement. Natural gas is distributed throughout the campus in steel piping that is more than 40 years old. Moreover, the soils at the Crookston campus are highly corrosive, which cause the steel to erode and leak. This project will replace all the remaining steel piping with modern plastic piping, and thankfully UMC is a non-smoking campus, by the way. The Duluth campus, we want to add to the business school annex there with a new HVAC and cold renewal. This project will create a state-of-the-art Center for Sales Excellence in the library annex building. HEPA will be combined with a significant amount of donated funding to improve not only the building, but advance popular student programs in the business school. Fundraising efforts are well underway, and support from HEPA will complete essential infrastructure renewal at the same time as a major programmatic improvement takes place. So we're really leveraging both donated dollars, local dollars from the University of Minnesota campus, and HEPA funds. At the Morris campus, the Briggs Library, we have fire code and restroom upgrades. The Briggs Library was designed and built in the late 1960s. There's no automatic fire sprinkler or ADA accessible restroom. This project will address both of these critical needs for this key student hub. And on the Twin Cities campus, the food science and nutrition building. This project will update several old mechanical systems and address numerous life safety and code deficiencies throughout the building. Many of the building components date back to the original construction in 1956, and they can no longer support the current programming, including the pilot food plant that lacks suitable energy, electricity, steam, and portable water to advance their research with dozens of prominent Minnesota food companies. So here's how we allocate HEPA across our four campuses, because we, as I mentioned, we don't have HEPA in the University of Minnesota Morris. We allocate HEPA dollars according to a straightforward and equitable formula based on how much space each campus has and what condition the space is in. For example, the Duluth campus represents about 9.8% of the university's entire square footage and about 8.1% of total recorded facility needs. Per the 50-50 formula that we use, Duluth receives 9% of the total HEPA appropriation. HEPA funding is guaranteed to reach all campuses with an emphasis on those that need it the most. In addition to this formula-based allocation, the Twin Cities periodically provides additional support to campuses from central funds in emergency situations. Let's talk a little bit about the projects that we have on the request list. This one, many of you have seen before, the chemistry undergraduate teaching labs. This is a project that's been on the list for several times. We funded the design for this from the legislature in 2020 for $3.3 million. We've spent those funds and are anxious to proceed with this important project. It is truly shovel ready. With me today is Mustafa Syed, a chemistry student from our College of Science and Engineering. If it's okay with you, Mr. Chair, I'd like to have him tell you a little bit more about the importance of this project.
Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Hi, everybody. My name is Mustafa Syed. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. Thank you for having me here today and for your continued support for our university and our state. My name is Mustafa Syed, and I am a senior at the University of Minnesota. I'm originally from Omaha, Nebraska, and transferred from the University of Nebraska after my freshman year. I felt that Minnesota what supply me with more opportunities and prepare me better for my future as a member of the science community. Now that I'm in my last semester, all of that turned out to be true, with one caveat being the reason I'm here today, to advocate for the renovation of our chemistry labs and spaces at the U of M. I've wanted to become a doctor since I was a kid and started my education journey at the U by taking chemistry like many other students, regardless of their majors. I know many future lawmakers, educators, and computer scientists who have walked the dimly lit halls of Smith. I began by taking general chemistry with Dr. Michelle Dreesen, who is approachable and passionate about the subject. I had the opportunity to teach that summer after, although it was online, which had challenges of its own. But after talking to current and past TAs, I'm a little grateful that I didn't have to teach in person because I would have had to stand in between doorways to teach and to keep an eye on everybody. The giant open room prevents students from discussing and learning with each other. The hallways have become classrooms as students are forced to use the quietest space available to them to analyze data and to solve complex problems. You may have toured it yourself and affirmed your choice of lawmaking over chemistry because it's just not an inviting space that promotes innovation as a world-class institution as the U, like the U should. I continued my chem pathway by taking organic chemistry, and you might have taken it or know somebody who has, and if you talk to them about it, they'll have flashbacks and have a shudder down their spine. But my experience and my fellow classmates' experience was far from that, mostly because of our remarkably talented professors. I've even talked to them about having a fulfilling career in chemistry if I decide that medicine isn't the right fit, mostly because I found out that I like chem a little more than biology, but please don't tell the med school I said that. I joined an organic chemistry research lab last year where I've been working to create potential treatments for drug-resistant bacteria. I overlapped my time in research with the U's organic chemistry lab course, so in the mornings I would spend my time in a modern and functional laboratory built for innovation and discovery, and in the afternoons I ducked my head underneath emergency shower handles, avoided clunky lab equipment integrated into the desks that haven't been used in a super long time, and struggled to find elbow room in our ventilation hoods. The lab reminds me more of an old movie about a mad scientist rather than a university teaching lab. I still thoroughly enjoyed my experience because of my professor and TA, though. That sentiment is ubiquitous in the chemistry department because we have staff who are passionate about the subject and provide an excellent education. Now we just need a proper space to provide it in. The only thing truly holding us back is the lack of a functional workspace that encourages collaboration and problem-solving skills that modern chemistry requires and that employers in our backyard like 3M, Ecolab, and General Mills all value. This is why a renovated chemistry building is so important for students like me. I'm graduating this May, and I understand that I won't be able to use the new facility, but I'm still happy knowing that with your support, that the next generation of students will be provided with an experience that allows them to find a passion for chemistry like I have in an environment that lives up to our status as a world-class institution because of our work here today. Thank you all for your time and consideration.
Thank you, Mustafa. Please proceed, Vice President Franz.
Thank you, Mustafa. I appreciate it. I'd like to ask Dean Boer to come up from the University's College of Food, Agriculture, and Natural Resources Sciences and talk about our next project of the farm complex that we've been talking about for some time. Why don't you come over here? I got all this equipment. I don't want you to...
Welcome, Dean Boer. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee. I'm Brian Boer. I'm Dean of the College of Food, Agriculture, and Natural Resources Sciences at the University of Minnesota. Thanks for inviting me here today to present a bit on some of the opportunities we have in CFANS related to improvement facilities. I'm here to provide information on FARM, which is called the Future of Advanced Agricultural Research in Minnesota, so 2A is not 1A, which is a $60 million request on the part of the University of Minnesota's capital planning. Minnesota, as many of you will know, is a global leader in agriculture and food systems, and the University of Minnesota has been a partner since its founding. The University of Minnesota delivers research discoveries such as new varieties of crops, healthier, more productive livestock, as well as future talent for Minnesota's agriculture needs to enable our agri-food businesses and community partners to thrive and grow. Key platforms in delivering these results are the fields and facilities we operate that include, as Myron mentioned, 10 of our research and outreach centers across the state, as well as on the St. Paul campus right here in the Twin Cities. However, these living laboratories, like so many other facilities, need significant modernization and investment if we were to continue to advance Minnesota's competitiveness as a global leader in agriculture. Right now in CFANS alone, 70% of those facilities are in critical to poor condition. FARM represents that opportunity to reinvest in a state-of-the-art integrated research platform that ties our animal, agricultural, and crop systems research together in a One Health construct that recognizes agriculture, food, the environment, and human health are all in one, are all connected to each other. This integrated design is a one-of-a-kind system of leapfrog innovations such as remote sensing, robotics, biological technologies, and modern agricultural production facilities that will enable solutions to some of the most challenging problems facing agriculture. In partnership with Riverland Community College in Austin, FARM represents a vertical education opportunity that includes K-12, two-year technical degrees, bachelor's, as well as graduate degrees and community outreach. This fully complements FARM's research strategy and is equally critical for delivering talent to drive our future agricultural systems and rural communities' economic development. A successful feasibility of the study has affirmed an investment opportunity with the Hormel Foundation that resulted in their pledging $60 million in support of the farm, in support of FARM pending our completed pre-design, site selection, and additional partnerships to complete what amounts to a $220 million project. The capital request by the University of Minnesota for $60 million from the state increases the competitiveness of Minnesota's agriculture economy, and FARM itself will contribute $18 million in direct economic impact and $33 million in total annual economic impact to the state of Minnesota, and that doesn't include the 40-to-1 economic return attributed to agricultural R&D in Minnesota. Together, this public-private university partnership has the potential to reinvigorate the living laboratory facilities the University of Minnesota needs to successfully serve Minnesota's farmers, businesses, and communities. So thank you for the opportunity to present today, and I look forward to visiting with you more about this exciting investment. Thank you.
Thank you, Dean. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Dean Bohr. I want to talk to you a little bit about the Duluth Academic Health Sciences. The University of Minnesota, and this is the second year of this request, is taking significant steps to join with the City of Duluth, St. Luke's Health System, Essentia Health System, to expand regional teaching and research in Duluth. The university is proposing to design and build a new academic health care center located in the downtown Duluth Medical District. The initial focus will provide students an interprofessional education and practice in medicine and pharmacy in collaboration with the two Duluth healthcare centers, Essentia Health Systems and St. Luke's Health Systems. This project will expand regional teaching and research space in Duluth, allowing medical and pharmacy programs to meet the growing demand for healthcare professionals in the region. This collaboration will prepare a healthcare workforce and better address the needs of Duluth, Greater Minnesota, and local indigenous populations. As Emily Larson, Mayor of Duluth, has said, quote, "During this unprecedented time of economic investment in our city, we hope this design will lead to construction of a new world-class education center embedded in a renowned medical setting serving Greater Minnesota. Literally, everyone wins with this expansion: the patients, the students, the community, and the university," end of quote. Initial studies call for an approximately 200,000 square foot building, but we need to design that first. And we are asking at this point for design funds from the legislature to help us figure out what that exact building should look like. I have just a few more, Mr. Chair, and I want to mention a couple of projects in particular to show the expanse of our need to reinvest in some of the facilities around the state. The Crookston Heating Plant, as you see here, this thing is even older than me, by the way. This plant is one of those essential but rather unglamorous projects. We all know how important a reliable furnace is in Minnesota winter. We have anything but reliable furnaces on the Crookston campus. This heating plant was built in 1911 and serves the entire campus, approximately 40 buildings and about 500,000 square feet. Funding will be used primarily to address aged and deteriorated equipment inside the campus heating plant. University of Minnesota Crookston relies on a 40-year-old boiler with an emergency backup propane boiler to heat the campus. This heating plant needs a significant investment to address issues with everything from the smokestack to the electrical panels. Certain parts are essential to the operation of the plant are only available now on eBay as the more standard supply channels have exhausted their inventory of available parts. And at the University of Morris campus, we have the Morris Multi-Ethnic Resource Center improvements. The Multi-Ethnic Resource Center, MRC as they call it, was constructed in 1899 and is the only campus building original to the Native American boarding school. Since 1972, the building has been the home of the Office of Equity, Diversity, and Intercultural Programs, which includes the Multi-Ethnic Student Programming, LGBTQIA2S+ programs, and the International Student Programs Office. This building lacks an elevator and other basic accessibility infrastructure, as well as a modern life safety and building systems. The funding here will be used to upgrade and enhance this facility. And finally, Mr. Chair, I want to report on the State Capital Appropriations Report. We are required to report to the legislature every January, which you have already received, on the status of our spending. That report shows that all the funds we received prior to 2020 have been fully expended. 96% of the funds received in 2020 have been spent or are otherwise obligated. The small amount of remaining funds are either balances from completed projects that we are in the process of converting to HEPR, or HEPR funds ready to be allocated to the next set of priority projects. Our track record has been to have about 90%+ of our total appropriation spent, encumbered, or otherwise obligated within 2 years of the bill. And we can confidently maintain this level of performance at any conceivable level of appropriation. We also want you to know that we've provided a lot of the support. We've been able to use women and minority business entrepreneurs and businesses around the state to support our targeted supplier diversity throughout the state to make sure that we're providing access to all contractors in the university business. And with that, Mr. Chair, I've concluded.
Thank you. We have some member questions for you. First off, Representative Grasso.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Franz, just wondering, does the U have any funds set aside or saved up? And if so, I mean, how much? Do you have any other financial resources available? Does the U have any money set aside?
Mr. Chair, Representative, certainly the university has a consolidated endowment fund that people contribute to. So the balance of that is a little over $2 billion now. And those funds are deposited there, are gifts. And almost all of those gifts monies are directed to particular programs or projects. And so we collect that money and invest it, and then we make sure that money is expended for the gift for which it was made. But we also have some funds that we call our reserve balances that we make sure, somewhat like the state's capital fund of $350 million the state has to maintain operations throughout the year. We also have funds in our temporary investment pool to fund our ongoing operations.
Representative Grasso.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Franz, with that, I mean, are those some resources that could help? I mean, I know you said that there's some of them are specifically named for different projects and such, or for programs. But I mean, are some of those funds available to help you to defray the costs of what they're asking for, what their needs are as far as upkeep and such?
Vice President Franz.
Mr. Chair, Representative, great question. The answer generally is no. So there, 90-some percent are designated to programs like maybe an endowed chair or a science project or a science edition. Most of them are not directed toward facilities. Those tend to be special gifts directed to that facility. So these are really very specifically directed by the donors to a particular program or college within the university campus.
Representative Grasso. Thank you. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Vice President Franz. First, say I think that I'm correct. Your chemistry lab is your number one project outside of HEPR.
Vice President Franz.
Representative, that's true.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Vice President Franz. I think I've toured that probably 2-3 times now, and certainly there are obvious needs to do something with that chemistry lab. So support this to the fullest extent that we can. I also I guess I've become a chemistry lab fan. I mean, when I chaired the committee, we funded the appropriations for the new chemistry building at the Duluth campus. Somewhat ironic because my own career in chemistry was very limited in success. Ironically, the day that I was going up to Duluth to help to dedicate the new opening of the chemistry building, I went into my Litchfield office, McDonald's, and there sitting at one of the tables was my high school chemistry teacher. And I said to him, "Mr. Bonkrud, I'm going up to Duluth to help dedicate a new chemistry facility." And he looked at me and said, "It wouldn't have helped you." So anyway, with that sidelight, I'd like to ask a question that I'm guessing one of my colleagues at the table here has. When we reconstruct or build new buildings, what kind of roofs do we have?
Vice President Franz.
Mr. Chair, well, we hope the representative, we hope the roofs survive. one of the things that we have done over the past is to, in our facility condition assessment, is to take, you know, because we, as I mentioned, 50% of our buildings are over 50 years old, so we have to monitor those. And literally looking out my window, I can see the disrepair of the current Northrop Auditorium roof. Actually, the roof was fine. It was the parapet or the building support that goes alongside that holds the roof up that had the failure there, which is really frustrating and something that we'd rather not be spending our time on. We had to cancel the Joffrey Ballet for this Saturday, as you may have heard. So, you know, but it just goes to the point that things happen, and you can't always predict when failure is going to occur, when there are unusual weather events or unusual stresses. So certainly with all the work we do, we try to make sure that the roofs are nice and strong. One of the things you mentioned, the chemistry laboratory building, I'm just so impressed on the number of students in every single college in at the University of Twin Cities campus have students going through that chemistry program. It is a really important part of every almost every undergraduate's experience. And so the change in teaching methods has, thankfully for both you and me, have changed over the years. And I can't tell you how important we feel this particular mission is to get the chemistry building, the new addition built. And that's a case where we're using the old Fraser Hall. And I've forgotten now how old Fraser Hall is, but it's pretty old. And we're taking that shell and we're doing that and adding on some of the chemistry space on top of that. So what we're doing is trying to rehabilitate an existing building and then add on to it, because we're very concerned about adding on too much space, because in some ways we don't want to add on too much more because we already have enough space. So the better thing is to redo what we have and in some cases like this, add on.
Representative
Dahl. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Vice President Franz. And just to be a little more specific, and we, in my years in this committee, I've looked at hundreds of roofs, and those that seem to fail the most frequently are flat roofs. Are there any plans to not do any more flat roofs?
Vice President Franz.
Mr. Chair, Representative, well, I'm not sure about that. I will take that suggestion back to the planning team, if that's all right. But, you know, I would just say the Northrop roof is not a flat roof. Close, but it's not flat.
All right, thank you, members. Let's keep our questions succinct so that we have enough time for Minnesota State soon. So next on the list will be Representative Carroll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Vice President France. So good to see you again. I know the state is well served with your service coming from not OMB, but
MMB.
MMB, thank you. So my question is, and I'm coming from city council experience, and I've found that dealing with capital requests, and it seems like it's cheaper to do upkeep and maintenance than repair and rebuild. You mentioned that you had a data point in terms of how many square feet of space that you have on your request. Can you mention that again?
Vice President Franz.
Mr. Chair, Representative, in the request itself or total?
Total.
slides. Well, we have 32 million square feet in the
system. In terms of what's in your request, Mr. Chair?
I don't know if I have a square footage for just the request itself, Mr. Representative.
Mr. Chair, if I can just... I thought you mentioned something like 800 and something square feet. Now, and the point of my question is to put that in context of how much space that is. You know, is it a shopping center size? Is it a, you know, whatever. Help us understand.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative, well, thank you. I think one of the things, though, the request really deals with some really old, several old buildings in the different, in Morris and Crookston, and on the Twin Cities campus, the chemistry building is really converting an old Fraser Hall, originally one of the, well, not the original law school, but the second law school building on the campus. And so it's converting that square footage from rehabilitating that square footage and adding a few hundred thousand more. So we're really rehabilitating, I would say, several hundred thousand square feet and then adding on some additional new square footage with the chemistry addition, the laboratory addition.
Representative Carroll.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Representative Kozlowski.
Thank you, Chair. And sorry, forgot your name.
That's okay. I do too most of the time. It's Myron. It's good.
Myron, yes, thank you. My question is around, can you speak to, as you're preparing this list of capital requests, as well as with the HEPR, which is a lot more in the kind of basic HVACs and facilities, how is it that you gather student input from kind of concept to design? And then the second part of that is, as you're building out the capital request and, you know, working on the projects, I was really glad to hear that you're talking about accessibility. Could you also speak to how we prepare the university for years forward around, you know, gender-neutral restrooms, for example, or culturally specific design in environmental spaces across campus?
Vice President Franz.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, great question, Representative. Mm-hmm. We just finished a Twin Cities campus plan in 2022, I guess, yes, it was submitted for 2022. And in that plan in particular was widely consulted around campus, a lot of input from students, from neighborhoods, obviously from the colleges and the deans and professors. So what do we want the physical plant to look like? And where do we want green space? How do we want people to move around? Where do we want the core of the campus to be? What do we want the St. Paul campus? And how do we have those? I mean, it's just chock full of those kinds of questions. And a big part of that, really, we learned from the students. And it's one of the reasons why we're exiting Morrill Hall in terms of the administration. Students want the core to be about teaching and research and their working together. And so it doesn't matter where we're located in terms of administration. What matters is, do the students have access inside the campus core to those things once they get there? But there's a lot of work that we're doing in terms of how you transport around those situations. But accessibility is like, I will just tell you, it's like the key to everything we look at, because we want to make sure that the campus is welcoming and open to everyone and people feel welcome and respected. That's both in terms of public safety, health and safety, and then just respect for that space being open to everyone to come and to learn and to teach or do research. So we literally are redesigning the office spaces that are attached to laboratories. I mean, it used to be in the old style, you'd have a laboratory and the professor's office would be right off the laboratory, right? That's kind of the way things were. Well, that model just doesn't work anymore. We need to have laboratories that can be completely changed in a period of a month or so to have a different lab activity going on in there. We've designed a building out on the St. Paul campus called the Microbial Cell Production Facility, and that first floor of that is one of those, we're designed to be an innovative space where we can change based upon the needs of the researchers for 10,000 square foot or 20,000 square feet and move people around. But clearly accessibility, making sure that the facilities, the restrooms, everything are available to everyone. And so that is the master plan that we completed this last year, really helpful in thinking about that and getting a lot of input from literally everybody on campus we could.
Representative Kowalski, quick follow-up.
Yeah, just a quick follow-up. Thank you so much for that, yeah. Vice President Franz. Really appreciate that. And then I heard you say that there's a master plan. Could you just speak a little specifically to the like gender-neutral restrooms, or if that's part of, I saw restrooms on the list, is that a part of that plan that's being included as well?
Yeah, Vice President Franz, let's keep the answer succinct so that we can move on to Minnesota State too after the
You really want to hear from Minnesota State, okay. I'll try to get that. I could filibuster for a while, I suppose. Mr. Chair, thank you, I'm sorry. And so, yes, one of the things, I can't find it specifically in my head. What I'll do is I'll get that, I'll get back to you and share that with you, if that's okay.
Yeah. Representative Pawlowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to go down the same path Representative Erdahl went down, but rather more quickly. I've said before, I'm a charter member of the Anti-Flat Roof Society, and when someone in higher ed tells us that, well, this wasn't the flat roof, I want to encourage members to penetrate to what they define as not a flat roof. Repeatedly, I've seen them say, well, it's got a 5% or a 3% tilt to it. To members of the Anti-Flat Roof Society, that's a flat roof. Anything that is not a pitched roof that you can't put your utilities in 24/7 and repair and use them and protect them, that is a flat roof. President Scott Olson of Winona State is over there. He just waved. He knows that periodically they have proposed buildings. And in the discussions, the design was changed because their definition of a flat roof did not meet the criteria of members of the Anti-Flat Roof Society.
Thank you, Representative Pawlowski. And last member for University of Minnesota, Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. France. In the Duluth project, the design project for the pharmacy, whatever, and this is me assuming things, so I had the representative in my office one day. It's going to take up some private land in the city. So you're going to take, I'm assuming it's going to be housing in between these two hospitals. So my concern is, whenever you take taxable land and make it public, you know, the rest of the taxpayers have to make up the difference. Is there any way? I travel a fair amount skiing. I love skiing. And all the ski hills have figured it out to put their business underneath and their housing on top. Is there any way that you could design this building to put the housing for those folks that you're going to displace on top of this building with a peaked roof, at least a 412 pitch? So that's what I'm curious about, if you guys can do something like that.
Vice President Franz.
Chair Lee and Representative, well, it's a good question because housing is obviously critical in Duluth. Now, there are some lots, open lots in that area because it's really the zone between the Essentia Hospital and the St. Luke's Hospital is where the medical district is. Mm-hmm. So there are some opportunities there, both from St. Luke's and from Essentia, who have offered some land opportunities for us. But one of the things the mayor made clear to us, Mayor Larson, was that we need to, if not that building, maybe that building, and certainly something we can consider because it's in the design phase, but buildings need to make sure that we provide housing for people who live in that area to live in that area. I appreciate the question.
Thank you, Representative Friends, and then thank you, Representative Scraba. If you want to follow up with this, you can follow up with them later.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Next up on the agenda, we have Minnesota State. Welcome to the committee. Chancellor Malhotra, please identify yourself, and we can proceed. Welcome, Chancellor. Please proceed.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Lee. Chair Lee, Vice Chair Liz Ryer, Minority Lead Dean Erdahl, members of the committee, I'm Devendra Malhotra, and I have the privilege to serve as Chancellor of Minnesota State. In the audience today, I would like to recognize a few individuals. First of all, Roger Moe, Chair of our Board of Trustees. And then I have two presidential colleagues also with me. One has already been recognized by Representative Pawlowski, but I'll do it again. Scott Olson, President of Winona State University, and Joe Mulford, President of Pine Technical and Community College. I thank them all for their service and for their commitment to Minnesota State. With me today is Brian Yolitz, Associate Vice Chancellor of Facilities for Minnesota State. Along with our committed campus colleagues, Mr. Yolitz oversees 28.6 million square feet across Minnesota. The past bonding cycle, Minnesota State hosted the House Capital Investment Committee at 22 of our campuses for them to see and learn firsthand about our infrastructure needs. We are appreciative of the time you all gave us and by visiting our campuses and learning more about our projects and meeting with the students impacted by your work. In a few minutes, you'll hear from Brian Yolitz about our rigorous bonding process and learn how the projects make their way to a final legislative request. Funding for HEPR and the projects on our list is about more than bricks and mortar. They are about the students we serve. For example, the classroom and student services renovation at Normandale Community College that was recently completed, thanks to you, impacts 29 different academic departments, including computer technology, computer science, economics, math, and reading programs. The work this committee does truly makes a difference in the lives of our students and the communities we serve. To give you an idea about the size and scope of the impact of Minnesota State system, our colleges and universities educate 300,000 students across the state. We have 26 colleges, 7 universities, located in 47 different communities, spread across 54 campuses. Of those 300,000 students I mentioned earlier, more than 64,000 are students of color or those of Native origin. More than 67,000 are 25 years or older. More than 60,000 are low-income students or Pell-eligible students. More than 40,000 are the first in their family to attend college, and 7,300 are veterans and service members. Our 26 colleges and 7 universities serve as catalysts for the social and economic vibrancy. Minnesota State is the most powerful and effective resource that the state has to ensure opportunity and prosperity for its citizens and communities. Our colleges and universities serve students no matter where they are on their educational journey, from a certificate all the way to an applied doctoral program. High school students or recent grads, students returning to complete degree or start another, and adults already in the workforce who need or want additional education or training. We form partnerships with employers across the state to ensure graduates entering the workforce are ready to contribute the first day on the job. And we produce more graduates for the jobs in critical high-demand fields such as healthcare and information technology than anyone else in the state. Mr. Chair, our campuses cannot do this without your help. And we are grateful for your partnership. With your permission and indulgence, Mr. Chair, I would like to turn the presentation over to Associate Vice Chancellor Yolitz. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chancellor. Please identify yourself and proceed, Associate Vice Chancellor.
Good afternoon, Chair Lee and committee. I am Brian Yolitz, and I serve the Colleges and Universities of Minnesota State as the Associate Vice Chancellor for Facilities. It's good to be with you again. Minnesota State's capital investment request for this legislative session is one many members are familiar with. It's in essence our 2022 capital budget request with three programmatic changes and projects adjusted for inflation based on Minnesota management and budget's recent guidance. The total program request is for $348.7 million. This includes $173.7 million for asset preservation projects at colleges and universities across the state of Minnesota. The balance of the request, or $175 million, funds specific design and construction work at 19 individual projects depicted on the green stars on the map of Minnesota. Just over half of these were either funded for, or just over half of these either fund construction of design work funded in prior sessions or fully funds design and construction of campus projects. The remaining eight fund designs now for, in preparation for construction funding requests in the future. Of note, 12 of these campus projects were included in the capital capital requests in 2020 as well as 2022. All have completed the pre-designs and are ready to move forward. They're shovel ready. The only notable difference between our 2022 request and the request today is a change in scope of the Pine Technical College project reflecting circulation around the campus and coordination with the city of Pine City. Lake Superior College, given their lease arrangement downtown Duluth, they need to leave those facilities in the summer of 2024. So this is a construction request as the campus is funding design on their own. And then finally, as priorities have changed in the community and at the college, North Hennepin Community College has withdrawn their request that members may be familiar with from our 2022 request. Given our one-third shared debt responsibility for individual projects, the request seeks state general obligation funding of $290 million and $538 million in user financing by Minnesota State for the 19 individual capital projects. And I'll give an overview of that in some later slides. Before getting too deep into the details, this request and priorities are the result of a disciplined process, one rooted in ongoing campus facilities planning and documented on a five-year cycle in individual college and university comprehensive facilities plans, or CFPs. In March of 2020, in preparation for the 2022 legislative session, our Board of Trustees adopted guidelines for developing the request and priorities. Institutions then reviewed their CFPs and prepared pre-designs for candidate capital projects for consideration by our board and presentation to the legislature. These candidate projects were then scored by representatives from across the Minnesota State system against the board guidelines. The results informed Chancellor Maholta's recommendation to the Board of Trustees, who reviewed and approved the request in June of 2021, and the program was submitted to the state of Minnesota's capital budget system. During the fall of 2021, we hosted members of this committee, along with your colleagues from the Senate Capital Investment Committee and representatives from the Governor's Office and Minnesota Management Budget, on nearly 50 campus tours across the state to see firsthand the needs and priorities of the Minnesota state system. With no bonding bill emerging in the 2022 session, we reviewed the project and program needs with campus leaders during the summer and fall of 2022 and affirmed the priorities that you see before you. Chancellor Maholta recommended and gained approval from our Board of Trustees for this session in November 2022. Earlier this month, MMB released their inflationary guidance to take into account supply chain, material and labor shortages, and applied that methodology to our program, resulting in the request before you today. Please use the handout in your packets as we guide you and walk you through individual priorities in the coming slides. Asset preservation funding for investments in our existing academic facilities, the ones we own and need and operate day in and day out, is our number one priority. HEPR funding is critical to keeping our campuses warm, safe, and dry. And please understand, our sound facilities play an important role in recruiting and retaining students, faculty, and staff. This funds 65 asset preservation projects at 38 college university campuses, ranging from major HVAC replacement at Alexandria Technical and Community College to roof replacement and chiller plant overhaul and fuel tank replacement at Winona State University. In the bonding years between 2014 and 2022, Minnesota State has requested $650 million in HEPR funding to take care of our existing academic facilities. During that period, we've received $158 million, or about 24% of the requested amount. As a result, the estimated backlog of maintenance in Minnesota State academic facilities has grown to nearly $1.2 billion. There is an additional renewal need in the next coming 10 years of about $1.3 billion. So the total 10-year renewal need for Minnesota State academic facilities is roughly $2.5 billion. Similarly, we've seen the individual project needs grow. In our 2022 request, the average project cost was roughly $1.6 million. This request The average project cost is $2.6 million. Given the combination of project complexity, inflation, and to some extent low funding in previous years, where we've trimmed project scopes to help stretch funding to touch as many campuses as possible. I cannot emphasize enough how important HEPR funding is. Those who visited campuses saw, heard about, and sometimes could smell firsthand the need at our colleges and universities. This session, HEPR funding cannot be strong enough, and what is needed going forward is substantial, sustained, consistent, and predictable funding in HEPR to allow our college and university leaders to properly plan and manage campus facilities. Turning to our individual project requests, the next four priorities are construction funding for design work funded in prior legislative sessions. At Minnesota State University Moorhead, construction funding acts upon design funded in 2018 and renovates 33,000 square feet of Weld Hall in the heart of campus, supporting the university's English, music, cinematography, and publishing programs, while enhancing accessibility for students, employees, and the public, while reducing the building's backlog of maintenance by nearly $8.2 million. Priority number three is for construction funding for Inver Hills Community College and the renovation of their technology and business buildings, 32,000 square feet for high-demand programs, including science, technology, engineering, and math, or STEM, information technology, cybersecurity, agriculture, and paralegal fields. Design funding for this was also provided in 2018. Funding for Minneapolis College is priority number four and renovates their Management Education Center to support and expand their ongoing partnership with Metropolitan State University. Finally, a priority five funds the renovation and construction of new space at Pine Technical Community College to accommodate the growing technical trades programs there, including advanced manufacturing, automotive, health sciences such as nursing, medical assistants, and EMT. Priority six of the is designed at the St. Paul College Academic Excellence renovation all the way through priority 13, the Metropolitan State Cybersecurity Lab renovation. We're all part of our capital budget request for 2020 as well as 2022, but we're not funded. Of note, after relatively modest but important renovation projects at Vermillion, the Vermillion campus of Minnesota North College, the East Grand Forks campus of Northland Community and Technical College, and the Brainerd campus of Central Lakes College, is a request for the design and initial renovation work to replace Armstrong Hall at Minnesota State University Mankato. Armstrong Hall is the main academic facility on the MSU campus, and it has exceeded its useful life and needs to be replaced to create a smaller, more efficient and flexible classroom to serve the university throughout the 21st century. Similarly, the request for design funding for the Center for Interdisciplinary Collaboration, Engagement, and Learning, or CECL, replaces two buildings at the Winona State University campus with aims to be a net zero facility when completed. As noted earlier, funding for Lake Superior College Integrated Manufacturing Workforce Labs is now for renovation and construction of space to provide technical spaces on campus to relocate the machine tool, welding, computer-aided design, electronics, and civil engineering programs from off-campus lease spaces in downtown Duluth that will no longer be available to the college after 2024. Finally, in this group of priorities, at priority 13 is a request to fund the design and renovation of existing space to support the cyber lab at Metropolitan State University. Finally, priorities 14 through 20 begins with a request for design and renovation and construction of a transportation trades and student services spaces at Alexandria Technical and Community College through the request for renovations at Hutchinson for programs including healthcare, construction, as well as student services spacing those attending River Ridgewater College there. These were all new requests in the 2022 program, and were also not funded. Pre-designs are complete on each of these projects. Request for to Alexandria, for Southwest Minnesota State University, Rochester Community Technical College, and Minnesota West Community Technical College are for design this session and will seek construction funding in the future. Finally, the projects at Riverland and Ridgewater Colleges would fully fund design and renovation of their spaces this session. The total program request is, again, $348 million. Just Changing gears slightly, I'd like to turn to past funding. We thank this committee for capital investments in our colleges and universities in the 2022 special session and the bonding bill that that produced. You and your colleagues provided Minnesota State more than $90 million in capital investments in our academic facilities. This funding has made a big difference. The $46 million in HEPR funding enabled design and construction of nearly 60 projects at 39 college university campuses across the state. The vast majority of this work is complete. In fact, I reviewed that with staff today. We're progressing, filing, closing out those projects right now, making campuses warm, safe, and dry, and having designs ready for construction funding as soon as it's available. In addition, funding included in the four projects at four college campuses. Chancellor Maholter talked about the project at Normandale Community College, but also at Anoka Ramsey Community College. Their business and nursing building are open and serving students now, and they're having great response of those renovations of the spaces. And then finally, design for Minneapolis College and Pine Technical Colleges are now complete, and we're ready to move forward for construction on both of those. As a follow-up to questions concerning user financing, changing gears pretty dramatically from the project lists, is a discussion on user financing, and that was occurred during our first meeting of this committee. And by, as background, by statute, Minnesota State is responsible for one-third of the cost of individual major capital projects at our college universities. The state of Minnesota is responsible for the balance, or two-thirds, of the project costs. This provision does not apply to asset preservation work funded through HEPR appropriations. Within Minnesota State, that user financing responsibility is shared equally between the system as a whole and individual institutions. One half of the user financing responsibility is paid for from state funding to Minnesota State as a system as a whole, and the other half is funded by the gaining college university where the actual capital project occurs. This portion is paid for through campus operating funds made up of state appropriation and tuition revenues. An example would be a $9 million project funded for a college university would see state funding of two-thirds, or $6 million in GO funds, and Minnesota State would be responsible for one-third of that, or for user financing, or about $3 million. Minnesota State's user financing portion would be shared equally between the system, $1.5 million, as well as $1.5 million to that gaining institution. The user financing includes both principal and interest associated with the bonds sold and financed by MMB. As a snapshot, Minnesota State's user financing at the end of fiscal year 2022, the user financing outstanding balance of principal for past major capital projects was $171 million, with an annual debt service payment in 2022 of $27 million. From a system perspective, this annual debt service amount is roughly 1.9% of total college, university, state appropriation, and tuition revenues. The impact on an institution's budget depends on the size of the college or university and their history of major capital projects. But generally, the debt service at a college or university ranges from just below 1% of their operating budget to just over 3% of the combined state appropriation and tuition revenues. If all of the major capital projects in the 2023 Minnesota State request were funded, Minnesota State would be responsible for $58.3 million in user financed over time, and would incur an estimated $1.4 million in additional annual debt service payments. This would be apportioned through our cost allocation model that I just described between the system as well as the gaining institution. If the entire $1.4 million new annual debt service these projects was attributed to tuition revenues alone, it would see an estimated tuition increase of about 2% overall. Chair Lee and committee, this concludes our formal presentation of the 2023 capital program request, as well as a recap of past funding from the 2020 legislative session and some insights into the user financing apportionment model within Minnesota State and how it impacts our college, universities, and the students we serve. We thank you for your time and attention today and look forward to working with you in this session in the weeks ahead, but also hosting you all on campus visits this fall as we prepare for 2024. We stand ready for any questions, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. So right now we have two members' questions first, Representative Ryer and then Representative Pawlowski. Representative Ryer.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Chancellor and Vice Chancellor. I'm interested in talking about how you are incorporating the effects of climate change into your construction planning and practices, especially with a system like yours, where you're ranging across all of the different conditions that we would face here in Minnesota. We know we're having immediate impact, as well as the need to be resilient and plan for the future as conditions continue to become different and more severe. So I would like to hear how you're approaching that. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Ryder, indeed, we, our Board of Trustees and their guidelines for our 2024 legislative session elevated both renewable energy and resilience in the guidelines for our capital project for the 2024 session. In addition, my colleague Michelle Gruner has infused resilience in our capital planning process. I mentioned earlier on about the CFP process, a comprehensive facilities plan, and that's now baked in our template and expectation that as campuses do their planning, that's included, and then that elements of the plan then are driven into the actual individual projects that come forward. So it is indeed an important part, and our board has driven that point home very well.
Representative Ryder.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So is it accurate to assume that the list of projects that we have here in front of us have that consideration built in, or did that planning occur after these projects were conceived?
Vice Chancellor.
Mr. Chair, Representative Ryder, indeed, many of these projects have sustainability and resiliency built in based on the state of Minnesota's B3 benchmarks and beyond, building benchmarks and beyond, and sustainable buildings 2030 standards. But and that's what's reflected in these projects. In fact, I would highlight the Winona State University CECL project going towards a net zero. I mean, that's the hallmark of resilience and sustainability in that request. But each one's got elements of that in terms of energy efficiency and the use of and consideration for renewable energy. As we prepare for 2024, our board has doubled down on renewable energy and sustainability, and I think you'll see a different makeup of projects in that request in the 2024 legislative session.
Representative Pawlowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Yolitz, for answering my question from the first meeting. I want you to repeat the statement that you just made about the impact on tuition for the committee.
Vice Chancellor.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pawlowski, I back up in my notes so I get, we spent a lot of time on the math, so I wanted to make sure we got it right. So from a system perspective, the annual debt service is roughly 1.9% of college and university total state appropriation and tuition revenues at the campus level.
Representative Pawlowski. So the impact on tuition again is what?
The impact on tuition, depending how we work that through, is about 2%, could be.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Yolitz, can you explain to me why this provision was put into law? What was the intent?
Mr. Chair, Representative Pawlowski, it's a bit before my time, but I've been able to study under the tutelage and mentorship of many. And my understanding it was that the desire of the one-third financing was to reduce and somewhat tampen the demand, if there was some skin in the game, if you will, in capital projects and not spending anybody else's money. And I think that was the basis of the provision. I think we've got either an author of that bill in our audience or others, but that's the way I understand it. And I took a look at what has happened since 2011, and Minnesota State has been basically flat. In fact, this capital budget request, if fully funded, would reduce our footprint by about 50,000 square feet. But I think we're going to see more of that in the future as we try to make buildings more efficient and more effective in the future.
Representative Pawlowski.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I appreciate that, Mr. Yolitz. I'd look at it just slightly differently. You say it's flat. I would say the intent of this was to lower the requests because you were using tuition to pay for them, and that did not lower the request. You say it's flat. Some of us would take a look at this and say we're still increasing the number of new requests. So, Mr. Chair, I planned in the Higher Education Committee to take a look at this also probably next week, and particularly with the tuition part of it. I want to have drafted a provision, and I'll either put it in the higher ed bill, Mr. Chair, or if you think it's more appropriate here, to repeal it.
Thank you, Representative Pawlowski. I really appreciate you bringing attention to this issue, and I do know that I think members of this committee do have some interest in looking at this further, too, and so we can have further discussion, whether that's in higher ed or in a potential bonding bill as we move forward. Thank you. Members, any additional questions? Seeing none, once again, just want to say thank you to Chancellor, to your staff for hosting us throughout the 2021 bonding tours. It is my expectation that we will be relying on your staff again to host us in 2022 and to our friends over at the University of Minnesota for also hosting us too. Really appreciate the generosity and the hospitality that all of you have shown us. Members, with that, so before I, I close, Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Ms. Chair, and I would like to express our appreciation as well for the hospitality you showed. Because we did have that minor little faux pas with a vegetarian lasagna once, but we'll let go.
Thank you for that, Representative Erdahl. So, member, our next meeting is on Monday, January 23rd. It will be a joint hearing with the Housing, Finance, and Policy Committee. On the agenda is a presentation from the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency on housing infrastructure bonds and GO bonds to address the housing crisis that we have in the state. And we will also have an informational presentation on House File 302 from Chair Howard on eligible use of housing infrastructure bonds, added issuance of housing infrastructure bonds prescribed. No action will be taken on Monday. And with that, members, this meeting is adjourned.